The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program, WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I am your host today, Tiffany Ray, and no, it is not Fina, but we're talking about something really, really special today, near and dear to my heart, and that is the topic of short sales. I'd like to remind you that this is a live radio show, so the number to call in with your burning questions is 1-877-772-9658, and if you are at work still, you can text us, Lord have mercy. You can email us at vinaradio@gmail.com. That's vinaradio@gmail.com. Today we have a really special guest, Julie, and she's going to be speaking with me about this wonderful topic. And I'm hoping to get into some really heated discussions and give you guys a preview of what's to come here soon. Julie, are you on the line with me?
I am. Can you hear me?
Hey, I certainly can. How are you?
I'm doing very well today. And yourself?
Hey, traffic, rain, blah, 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 all the usual stuff that's going on in the wonderful, cloudy Cincinnati, Ohio. Yeah. So, you know, I think you and I have something in common. I don't know if you were expecting Vina today or if you knew a little bit about my background. It's very similar to yours, if I'm not mistaken. So I'd like to start out with the listeners by you telling us a little bit about your career and how you got into short sale negotiation business, if you don't mind.
Okay, sure. So I originally started by working with a private mortgage insurance company as an auditor. I became very familiar with the normal life of a mortgage, the entities that had an interest in the mortgage and what their interests were, the processes that could affect the life of a mortgage like foreclosure and bankruptcy, because each state is different. And so I did that for several years, and then I moved into their loss mitigation department, and there I was a negotiator. I was the person they were trying to get to say yes to their short sale deal. I did that for a couple of years, and then I became their corporate default manager. I traveled around the country. I went to mortgage servicing shops. I sat down with their leaders, and we talked about their portfolio, what their delinquency numbers were, and what they were doing to help those homeowners that were in trouble. Mm-hmm. Because currently, and of course you could say, well, why would a company want to do that? It's a very small percentage of loans that are in default, but even at 1.5%, currently there are $12 trillion in mortgages. That means on any given day, they've got $181,650,000,000 in delinquent mortgages. So as an investor or an insurance company, you're very interested in your defaulted portfolio and what's being done to help those individuals. So I was a corporate default manager for several years, and then I went to work for the second largest mortgage investor in the country. I was their on-site loss mitigation consultant at one of the top five mortgage servicing companies in the country. I spent 3 years on site. Now, if there was a loss up to $5 million, they could walk into my office, and I had the authority to sign off on those deals. And it was my job to make sure that they tried to help every single homeowner who was in trouble. Because every time we did a workout with that homeowner, it saved us money as an investor, mm-hmm. because it cost us, we looked at the numbers. If when a property goes to foreclosure sale, we get less money than if we had sold it as a short sale. So if at all possible, we're trying to minimize those losses and do those short sales. So I was on site, and after 3 years, I started to make friends with the people who actually did the jobs, because it's one thing that the VPs tell you. it's something else that the everyday employees tell you. And so one day I was having lunch with my friend Wanda, and I said, Wanda, because she's the manager of a collections group, and one of the things that I would do is every month I would have a luncheon, and I would have all the collectors come, and I would talk to them about hardship, bad things that happen to good homeowners, and these people would qualify for workout deals in the loss mitigation department. And when they start telling you these stories about death, divorce, unemployment, military deployment, when you hear those words as a collector, you send them over to the loss mitigation department where we can do a workout deal for them. Not only will we help them, but as the investor or the insurance company, we will pay an incentive to the mortgage servicer for doing the workout deal. So it's an opportunity for your mortgage company to make money every time you send somebody over there. And so, you know, the VPs are like, yeah, go ahead, do your lunch. Teach them, teach them, teach them. And you know what? Not one more workout deal came over to the loss mitigation department. I could not figure out what was going on. And then one day I sat down with my friend Wanda, who is a manager of a collections group. And I said, Wanda, I don't get it. Your collectors, they're smart people. I know they're getting this information. Why are they not sending them over there? And she said, you don't understand how this works. She said, the VP of collections gets a bonus at the end of the month, and it's based on three things. First is the average call talk time. If we're over 2 minutes on our call talk time average, then he is one step away from his big fat bonus at the end of the year. Two, of all the people we spoke to, what percentage paid their loan like they said they were going to? If 95% of the people paid like they agreed to, then he is the second step closer to this big old fat bonus at the end of the year. The third thing they look at is where do the delinquent loans fall in their portfolio? Is it in the 30-day bucket of collections where we're getting late fees? So if you make the payment after the 15th, but prior to the last day of the month, business day, it's applied to your account, then the only thing that happens is the consumer has to pay a late fee, okay, to the mortgage company. They don't have to report you late to the credit bureaus because technically you paid before the end of the month, okay, but you just had to pay a late fee. In 1 month at that mortgage servicing shop, they brought in $250,000 a month in late fees, and they had to take no activity on the account because it paid by the end of the month. They want every single person to pay by the end of the month. She said, so it's based on those three things. They're on an automatic dialer. If they do anything other than hang up the phone, it shows on the report. And if the VP sees that they're sending all these calls over to loss mitigation where it takes them 6 months to do a workout deal, and they're going to sit in that six-month bucket, he's not going to get his bonus, what do you think they said? She said, the first time they transfer a call over to loss mitigation, I give them a verbal warning. The second time, I write them up. And the third time, I fire them. And I said, oh, my God. The real estate professionals out there have no idea how this really works. I had no idea, and this has been my career.
Wow. There's a system. I was going to say, you really unpacked a lot in that introduction. And my guy's telling me that we need to take a break, but I would like to bring back some points that you talked about as soon as we come back from commercial. Stay with us, guys, and please call in with your questions. Welcome back. Welcome back, everybody. This is Real Live Real Estate Investing, and I am your host, Tiffany Ray. And today we're talking with Julie about this wonderful topic of short sales. And right before we took the break, I did let you guys know that this is a live call, so your calls and or emails are appreciated. The number to dial is 1-877-772-9658, and or you can send us an email directly at Vena Radio, that's VENA Radio@gmail.com. And Julie, I think you were talking about a lot of things, but what really struck me was you were saying that there was really no incentive from the collection side because of their wrap time, you said paid on time, or we would call that a promise to pay or a PTP, and then the account being in 30-day delinquency and falling back after the late fees to a non-reportable status, and then the bank doing what they do, and that is collect fees. And I think you were about to tell us about this process, but before we go, I'm going to call a jargon flag, and which is we do often at RIA, and that is, give us a little bit of information in your definition about what a short sale actually is before we go and dive into the process.
Okay, So first of all, let me tell you, the only thing short about a short sale is the payoff on a loan, okay?
Oh, understood.
So a short sale just means that when you go to closing on the real estate transaction, selling that property, there's not going to be enough money to pay all the lien holders in full, plus cover the cost associated with the closing on the sale. So let's say you owed $100,000 and fair market value is $90,000. Doesn't matter what you owe. Matters what fair market value is. Mm-hmm. So the mortgage company would entertain a short sale offer because values had declined in that area. And we do it all the time because, you know, it saves us money in the long run. It beats the heck out of a foreclosure sale. And so I didn't realize throughout my career that there were really systems in place and that the VPs weren't telling me this. And it wasn't until I made friends with those individuals. So at that point in my career, I looked around and said, oh, my God, I can see these delinquencies coming like a freight train in the night. And the real estate agents, the loan officers, the mortgage brokers, the attorneys, none of them had any idea how this works. Okay, they are trying out of the goodness of their hearts, trying to make these deals work for consumers. But they really have no idea, and nobody told them, okay? So I started writing continuing education classes and getting them approved with the bar, the banking commission, and the real estate commission. So for a long time, that's what I've been doing. Mm-hmm. And so I also have worked with the North Carolina Real Estate Investors Association. That's how I got hooked up with you guys. And so I'm always glad to share some information. And so one more little tidbit that I'm going to throw out for your listeners today. So how do you know which department you are in? Are you in collections mm-hmm. where they are not going to help you, or and they're going to hang up on you, even if you recognize you're in the wrong department and you ask them to transfer you? The person is going to get reprimanded or fired if they transfer the call. So this is where the consumer gets hung up on by accident, and they say, I can't seem to get through. That's because you're in the wrong department. So collections does everything verbally over the phone. No documentation is required. If that's what they're telling you on the phone, you're in the wrong department. Okay?
Makes
now
sense.
You're going to say, I want to talk to loss mitigation, and they're going to go, yeah, yeah, that's who you're talking to. But that's because they can't transfer you. So what you need to do, and here's another tip for all those listeners out there, you're going to tell the consumer, go back and get the mortgage statement from when you are current. Because when you are current, the 800 number that prints on your statement is the 800 number to the customer service department. As soon as you get behind on your statement, the 800 number that prints on your statement is the 800 number to where, Tiffany?
Collections department.
Collections. Where I call it voicemail jail. You are not going any further than that, okay? Even if you know how to ask, they are not going to transfer you over because it's going to have a negative effect on them personally, okay? It's not that they're trying to hurt you. I mean, they just have a job to do, okay?
Right, and you said there's often an incentive attached to that as well. So why would I give up my incentive or my bonus to let somebody speak to an actual loss mitigation or a live person that would actually help them with a workout status that might help them as opposed to back and forth on this 30-day, 60-day cycle?
That's right. And so just like real estate agents and real estate attorneys in loan origination are measured on the number of transactions they do and dollar volume. The more you do in dollar volume, the more you do in number of transactions, mm-hmm. the better you're considered to be. Same mm-hmm. thing in loss mitigation. These negotiators get paid to do workout deals. They really, really want to help you. I have a husband who's been a mortgage lender for 30-plus years, and every now and then I'll run into somebody who's trying to buy a house, and they'll say, oh, my loan officer, he just doesn't like me. He doesn't want to give me a mortgage loan. No, I was married to a loan officer. I'm here to tell you they really, really, really want to give you the loan, okay? And if they can't, it's not because of something they did. It's something was on your credit or what your income or whatever it was that prohibited them from giving you a loan, but they get paid to do that. So when a consumer tries to tell me that negotiator at the mortgage company just really doesn't want to help me, I'm thinking to myself, oh, no, they get bonus measured and paid on the number of workout deals they closed. As a matter of fact, if your deal doesn't close, they did a whole lot of work for nothing.
For nothing.
And nobody wants to do work for nothing.
Exactly.
Okay? So one of the things we're going to talk about on the 12th is how do you get the stuff together so that when you get in front of the person that is the real decision maker, that they have the information they need so we can move forward. And what is normal, reasonable, and customary? I'll have people come up to me all the time and they'll say, you know, I heard about your expertise and I want to talk to you about this deal that's going on. And I'll say, okay, tell me about the hardship. And they'll go, hardship, what's that?
Exactly.
Well, if you don't have one, they are not doing a deal for you. Okay, and if you don't even know what it is, what in the world are you doing trying to do a short sale transaction? Because you can't do the workout without a hardship, and you don't even understand the basics. Now, everybody's got to start someplace, but you really need to get some education behind you. And see, this is where short sales have taken a bad beating from the public, and that is they say, oh, don't do them. You never get them to close. Of the 10 I took on, I only got 2 to close. Well, that's because you didn't ask about the hardship first thing right off the bat, because if they don't have it, don't waste your time.
Right. Okay? I think people miss that. So, you know, the banks are in the business of making money. And so it is not just their normal procedure to go around writing off a piece of the debt that a customer incurred on their home. So they don't necessarily offer you a short sale, right? So you have to put this packet together, and this hardship that you're talking about is a A1 key component, and then the inability to pay as well. So there's that should be tied in with the hardship. And so what I hear you saying is that what you and I both know, that short sales are a real thing, right? They are real, and you just have to know what buttons to push and how to put that offer or that package together to get them through and to the right person.
Right. And if you know the right questions to ask, mm-hmm. in the first 5 or 10 minutes of talking to the short sale seller, you can determine whether they are ready, willing, and able to do what they're willing to do. And I like to use a lot of loan origination examples because people can relate to those a little bit more. So when the buyer decided they wanted to drive by a house and they were going to ride around with a real estate agent, one of the very first things an agent who's experienced is going to say is, do you have cash or have you spoken with a loan officer? Because I don't want to start driving you around and spend a lot of money and my time and find out that you don't qualify for anything. Mm-hmm. So if you've got somebody, great. If you don't, let me give you the name of 3 people. Let me get you going that way. And if the buyer says to you, oh, no, I have no intentions of speaking to a loan officer, and no, I don't have the money, then are you going to put them in the car and drive them around?
Typically not.
No, and when you're talking to the short sale seller, if they don't have an involuntary hardship and they're not willing to produce their documents and they're not willing to speak to the people they're going to have to talk to get their deal to go through, just like loan origination, if you were the real estate agent and the buyers called you up and said, look, my loan officer says he wants to give me a 7% interest rate, but I want 6.5. Tiffany, would you call my loan officer and see if you can negotiate him down from 7 to 6.5? Would you dream of calling a lender to negotiate on behalf of a buyer for their lending terms?
That's not going to happen.
No.
That's
not going to happen. And same thing with the homeowner. Homeowner, there's going to come a time when you're going to have to talk to these people. Now, homeowners are a little gun-shy because of the process that they've been through. And so they're afraid. And they tried to do the right thing. They tried to reach out in the very beginning when the stuff went wrong, but they only got collections. And they were told, pay in full, or we're going to send you to foreclosure, mm-hmm. and that's it. There are no options for you. And there aren't in collections, okay? There are in loss mitigation. So I was leading them down this path a few minutes ago, and I'm going to pick back up on it. They're going to get their mortgage statement from when they were current. They're mm-hmm. going to dial the 800 number. The very first thing they're going to hear is the automatic attendant. It's going to say, welcome to Julie Iden Mortgage Company. Please enter your loan number. Don't. If you enter your loan number into the computer, it will recognize it as a delinquent account. And Tiffany, where will it send your call?
Automatic routing right back to collections.
To collections, okay? So you're not going to put in any numbers. Eventually, a real-life customer service rep is going to come on the phone, and the very first thing they're going to say is, welcome to Julie Iden Mortgage Company. Can I have your loan number, please? Do not give it to them. What are they told to do with every single delinquent homeowner who calls, no matter what they say you send them to?
You're going to route them back to collections.
Exactly. So here's what I want the homeowner to say. Before I give you my loan number, let me tell you why I'm calling. Mm-hmm. I need to be on the phone with your loss mitigation department because I need a workout deal. Could you please give me the 800 number directly to that department so from now on I can just call them directly instead of having to bother you? And at this point, the person who's being measured by the time they're on the phone says, sure thing, let me give you their number. And now you are calling the department who gets bonus, measured, and paid. And how do you know the difference between loss mitigation and collections? Because loss mitigation is going to say, we can't do a thing for you till we get your financial package. And you're going to have to send in as much stuff as you sent in to get the loan and probably more. Okay, so that's how you know whether you're in loss mitigation or in collections. Collections is doing it verbally over the phone. Loss mitigation, they're going to say, we need the financial package. You know you're in the right department. So that's my little tip on how to get to the loss mitigation department, because that's where you really need to be. And I liken it to a salmon swimming upstream. There are a bunch of homeowners have gone off into the wrong department, into collections, and they'll die there at foreclosure. And they can't figure out how to get past it, when in fact, the whole entire time, there was a department who got bonus measured and paid to do that.
Exactly. So, and so that was a great tip, Julie. And I'm hoping you guys are catching this stuff. And I hope that you guys have written some of this stuff down, because Julie is going to be with us on the 12th. And she's going to be talking about this stuff all day long in her, I'm going to call it a Saturday intensive on short sales. And stay with me, Julie. With that, guys, we're going to be right back. We need to take a quick break. Stay with us. Welcome back. Welcome back to Real Live Real Estate Investing. I'm your host today, Tiffany Ray, and we're talking about the topic of short sales. And so before we get back to talking to Julie about all these tidbits that she's dropping, and I hope you guys have your pen and readied your notes for this particular segment, I wanted to mention a couple of announcements. This coming Thursday is our in-person meeting. That's our in-person meeting. It's going to be a networking event. There's going to be over 100 local investors, and we're going to talk about all different kinds of things. There's going to be door prizes, food, drink, and we're going to have tables there talking about expert things. So I hope that you're able to join us this coming Thursday evening. You can get your ticket at CincinnatiRIA.com, and it is free, and it is open to the public. And all of you local folk, I expect to see you there. And before we get off the phone, I was talking about the event that's coming up on the 12th, where Julie's going to do her Saturday intensive. That's going to be on Saturday the 12th, and we're going to be talking everything, or Julie's going to be talking, I should say I, because Julie, you know, you and I probably could talk about this all day, but this class is $57 for members, and it is also available at CincinnatiRIA.com. And if you're listening from afar, you need to check your group website first to make sure that there's that offer is not there as well. But for you local guys, that's going to be CincinnatiRIA.com. And so, Julie, before we got off the phone, we were talking something about SHOP, and we were talking about what people need to ask the various department, the dreadful collections department. But you said something that stuck out to me a little bit, and you were talking about a seller being almost uncooperative, or what we would call maybe non-motivated in the investor world. So maybe we can take just a few minutes and talk about the approach. So you said they probably are, they tried in the beginning, so maybe there's some embarrassment there that they've not been able to work this out themselves. They thought that their plan was going to work and they couldn't. Now they're ashamed and they just want to put their head in the sand. So just a regular investor like me, and I knew that there was an issue, what could an approach be to talk to a seller about why they would want to deal with me and help them get this short sale through?
Okay, so as an investor or in a mortgage insurance company, because those are the two real decision makers mm-hmm. in the process, because they're the people who are going to, those are the entities who are going to lose the money. So they're going to make sure that it stings if you let a property go to foreclosure sale, and that it stings bad, because we take losses on those properties. Millions and billions of dollars every year we take in those losses, and we take it very seriously. So we want to make sure that we really hit that consumer financially in their pocketbooks. And so there have been, now I have to tell you, in the decades that I've been doing this, I have spoken with thousands and thousands and thousands of delinquent homeowners, and here's what they tell me. The very first call they made was to their loan officer or mortgage broker, because that is the person they shared all their personal financial information with when they got the loan. And so that's the person that they think can now help them mm-hmm. since they're in trouble. And so they call their loan officer or mortgage broker, and it sounds like this. Hey, Bill, it's Julie. Look, I'm giving you a call because 3 months ago I lost my job, and I've used up all my savings and all my extra funds, and I'm now a couple payments behind on my mortgage payments, so I need to get an equity line. I need to tap into those funds associated with my property, and I use that money to hold me over, at which point my loan officer or mortgage broker says to me, if you are telling me that you are currently delinquent on yep. your mortgage loan with me, I cannot make you another mortgage loan. And at that point, they hang up the phone from the consumer. They go, okay, so then I got to sell. They call up the real estate agent, say, look, I need you to come over today. I'm going to talk to you about selling my house. And so the agent says, well, let me pull some comps. I'll be over at 4 o'clock to talk to you. And the homeowner calls to their mortgage company and says, how much money do I owe you? And they said, Julie, you owe us $200,000. I said, thank you very much, and I hung up the phone. 4 o'clock, when the agent showed up, she said, Julie, I looked at the comps in your neighborhood. I think the best we're going to be able to do is 175. Now I'm doing the math in the back of my head. 200 minus 175 means I'm going to have to come up with $25,000 just to pay off the mortgage loan, plus the commission and the closing costs. I look across the table at my real estate agent, and I say, thanks for coming. I'm going to talk with my husband about it, and then we'll give you a call.
Mm-hmm.
And I let the real estate agent walk out the door. I stop answering the phone. I stop opening the mail. And I think that I have avoided foreclosure, because I'm telling you, as a lost negotiator for the insurance company, I had to make proactive calls to these delinquent homeowners. And they said to me, I have not picked up the mail. I haven't answered the phone. Ergo, that mortgage company cannot foreclose yeah. on me. Now, I want you to imagine you're the judge, and the attorney for the mortgage company stands in front of you and says, Your Honor, our automatic dialer called every single day, and we left a message to call. It's documented in the system, LMTC, left message to call. Every time they make that automated dial, and they're doing it every day, believe me. And so we left 300 voicemails, Your Honor. We sent 2 certified demand letters to the property address, and they didn't pick up either one. Your Honor, may we proceed with our foreclosure sale? I am here to tell you, even though you haven't answered the phone or opened the mail, you are still going directly to foreclosure sale, and you just don't know it because you haven't answered the phone or opened the mail. I call it the ostrich syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
You were just talking about it, Tiffany. The homeowners, they think by avoiding it that it's not going to happen. It's going to happen, and it's going to be bad. It's going to be on your credit report. And when you go to get another mortgage loan, you're probably going to have to pay a higher interest rate if they will even give the loan to you.
That's
so
right.
A rule of thumb with workout deals. If you do a loan mod, if you do a cure-related workout mm-hmm. on the deal, then we don't have to worry about it because we're fixing it. If we do a non-cure-related workout, like a short sale, depending on how the loan origination market is doing, because, you know, sometimes we're real loosey-goosey and we'll give a loan to anybody, and other times you got to be tight as a tick to get a loan. So depending on how the market is, after a short sale, you can expect to have to wait anywhere from a year to 3 years before you can get another mortgage loan. If we did a deed in lieu,
mm-hmm.
think about it like a voluntary repo on the car. You deeded the house back to the mortgage company instead of taking it to foreclosure. So we got to save all that time and all that money associated with foreclosure and just go ahead and take it back 5 years before we'll give you another mortgage loan on the origination side. If you let it go to foreclosure sale, 7 years. So if I were talking to a young person who had their whole life ahead of them, I might really strongly encourage them to do a short sale, because I know right now they hate their mortgage company, okay? They tried to do the right thing. They feel like that nobody has helped them because all they did was talk to a collector who said pay, pay, pay. They couldn't get into loss mitigation, so they've got some hard feelings towards the mortgage company. And you can tell, Tiffany, have you ever seen some of these properties by the time they got to foreclosure sale?
I would say distressed. That's the word.
They have destroyed the houses because mm-hmm. they're so mad at the mortgage company. And believe me, at the insurance company and at the investor, we think about this. So when it is the homeowner who actually calls me on the phone and says, Julie, I was talking to the mortgage company today, and they told me they did not have the authority to do what I was asking for. So I asked them, who does? And they said it's the investor. Mm-hmm. And the contact name there, her name is Julie, and this is her number. Call her. So I am calling you directly. I am the homeowner, and I am asking you not to give me a 1099, not to give me a deficiency judgment, mm-hmm. because those are two things that happen with the difference between what you owe and what you sell for, and the homeowner needs to ask about these things in the very beginning. Do not make the assumption that because the mortgage company has not brought it up that we do not fully intend on doing this to you. We are just not mentioning it because as soon as the homeowner finds out about the deficiency judgment and the 1099, they freak out and they want to back out of the short sale deal. And I get this call all the time from real estate professionals. And they go, oh, my gosh, Julie, I've been working my hiney off for 6 months. We finally got this short sale deal approved. And in the short sale deal, in the letter to the homeowner, in the approval letter, it says there's going to be a deficiency judgment for the difference between what they owed and what they sold for. So if it was a $20,000 difference, it could be a $20,000 deficiency judgment. It could be a $20,000 1099 filed with the IRS. It's going to show as income for them. And as soon as they found out about this, Julie, they want to back out of this deal. And at this point, when somebody tells me this, I know they know absolutely nothing about short sales and how this really works. Because when the mortgage company says it is their intention to file a deficiency judgment and a 1099, and let me be clear about this, it's not the bank that decides this. It's the investor who owns the loan or the insurance company if they're taking the loss. And if both of them are taking a loss, it'll be a joint decision between the two of them. Mortgage company is just doing what they're being told to do because they're strictly servicing the loan. They don't own it. They're not the insurance company, and they're not going to take a loss when this is over. They're just going to file a claim and let the money go to the investor. So you got to really understand who you're talking to, who is the real decision maker, and we're going to talk about that on the 12th, how to figure out who that real decision maker is so you can get to the right person. And so it was very easy for me to say to the homeowner's attorney, no. To the homeowner's real estate agent, no, because then you had to call the homeowner back on the phone and tell them. And this is when they start crying into the telephone. And it's really hard when the husband starts crying into the phone and telling me how terrible it is and they're going to kill themselves. And more, I would take more than two hands for me to count the number of times that I've had a consumer commit suicide before we could get to the end of it. It is extremely serious. And if anybody ever tells you they're going to do that, you really need to refer them to a suicide hotline because they're
right.
serious.
That's right. And I don't think that people think about this. You're talking about your home. And for most people, it's their life's dream. And they've put everything that they've had into it. And they put their life savings into it. And so it's the most emotional purchase that you pretty much will ever make in your life. And then to think that you're going to lose it to something or somebody that's telling you that, hey, in their mind, they're a failure. And you're absolutely right. The severity of the situation. If somebody tells you that they're thinking about hurting themselves, you bring up something really interesting about the investor. You keep saying that. So I think we should, and I don't want to get too far into the weeds because I don't want to give up all your goodies for the upcoming Saturday, but investor and filing a claim to me is indicative of a GSE or sponsored or mortgage-backed loan, different from a private lender who has their own mortgage loans that they do not sell, or a smaller institution. So for the most part, I think we should maybe explain to people that the Fannie and Freddie and the GSE sponsored loans make up the majority of the loans, and that those are the ones they're most likely dealing with, as opposed to, and I don't want to call them moms and pops to be mean, but your, you know, regional or local banks.
As a matter of fact, you are correct. And one of the things we're going to talk about on the 12th, I'm going to give you guys links to Fannie and Freddie and VA because they've got so many people that reached out to them and said, hey, do you own my loan?
Mm-hmm.
Are you the investor on my loan? That they got tired of having answered, and they've got websites. So we're going to have the links that go through our materials on the 12th for consumers. But, yes, so that's what I mean when I say investor. I'm talking about Fannie, Freddie, VA, FHA, mm-hmm. Fannie Mae. I'm not really talking about the bank, because the bank really owns less than 10 to 15% of their
mm-hmm.
portfolio.
That's right.
85 to 90% of the loans they're originating, they're selling off to investors at closing. So do they care? You know, and so one day, and this will blow your mind, I get a call. I'm working as the corporate default manager for the private mortgage insurance company. I get a call from a mortgage lender down in Dallas, and they said, Julie, we added together all the fees we got for doing workout deals last year. Then we sat down and added up all the costs of the employees that we have to have on staff to do those workout deals. And what we found out is the fees you pay us do not cover mm-hmm. the cost of having those employees. So we have made a decision. We are no longer going to have a loss mitigation department. We're going to take all those people on loss mitigation, and we're rolling them all into collections. We're just going to have collections, customer service, bankruptcy, and foreclosure. That's going to be it. And I said, well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to come down next week, and you can show me the numbers, and we'll talk about it. I hung up the phone, and I immediately called the Fannie Mae rep. And I said, this is what they're talking about doing. No more loss mitigation department. Do you want to go with me to the meeting next week? And she said, yes. So we went down together the next week. And the VPs of the loss mitigation department pulled out their reports, and they slid them across the table, and they said, there's the numbers. We're showing them to you. Doesn't make any money for us. And I looked across the table and said, I completely understand, and here's the deal. If you do not have a loss mitigation department, GE Mortgage Insurance will no longer insure your loan.
That's right.
And the Fannie Mae rep looked across the table and said, oh, by the way, if GE won't insure your loans, we won't buy them. And as soon as Freddie Mac finds out we're not buying your loans, what's Freddie going to do? Stop buying your loans.
That's right.
And they looked across the table and said, we reconsider. I am telling the listeners today, when they call their mortgage company, most of the time they're going to feel like the person on the other end of the line could care less. And guess what?
It's true.
They care less.
That's right.
They're
it's true.
In the loan. They
mm-hmm.
don't own it.
Mm-hmm. It's that front load.
Important.
Yes, that front load theory that you're going to get more up front and you don't have to worry about the back. But there is a such thing called Dodd-Frank. And with that, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. Guys, stay tuned. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Real Live Real Estate Investing with Tiffany Ray today. And I'm speaking with Julie about short sales. And Julie, I'm not really sure what's happening here. Usually our lines are blowing up, and this topic is such a hot topic that I'm surprised that we don't have any callers. But I did check the emails, and there is a burning question about a reverse mortgage. So you care to take that question on today?
Well, go ahead. Let's see what it says.
Yeah. I didn't read it all the way through, so I can't tell you if it's a good one or not. So we'll both hear it out together. It's from Chris Miller. It doesn't tell me where they are, but it says, we have a situation where the owner passed. He has a reverse mortgage on the property. The payoff is $260K. The house is only worth $200,000. He left a lot of items to a friend that is also the executor, a Harley Davidson, four boats, a camper, blah, 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 blah. In a short sale, will they require the asset to be sold before the other assets, the Harley, the boats, to be sold prior to negotiating the short sale offer?
So, Tiffany, this is my favorite answer in class.
Mm-hmm.
So it depends.
Yep.
It depends on the state that we're talking about, that the property is located in. It really is a good question for a real estate attorney. And I am not an attorney, and I'm not an accountant. So one of the things you will hear me say throughout our time together is, I'm not an accountant and I'm not a CPA. Now, I'm making you aware of how the processes work and who's involved and what interests they have and how to identify who they are and what's normal and what's not. Okay. Because, there's legislation that talk about Dodd-Frank. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
there's legislation that's been passed, and not only did it change on the origination side, but it also changed on the servicing side. And on the servicing side, it said, when a homeowner submits a workout package to you, a mortgage company, you have 30 days to get them an answer, because the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and the banking commissions from the states turned to the mortgage companies and they said, hey, what's the process for a short sale? And they said, here's how it works. The consumer fills out a financial form. They submit financial documents. We pull a credit report. We order an appraisal or a BPO. It comes around to a person, but instead of being called a loan officer or a mortgage broker, we call them a negotiator. They take that information and they load it into the computer. Instead of being Minenet and Mornet, it's Minenet and Mornet on the back end instead of what the Fannie and Freddie use on the origination side. So it's the same exact process. They enter it into the computer. And then out of the last page of the computer, there were three sets of lights, red, green, yellow. And then the negotiator doesn't have to think, because when I was a negotiator, we had to actually, there weren't computer programs to do these kind of things, but now there are. So now they just enter it into the computer. They go to the last page, and everything that turns green gets an approval letter on it. Everything turns yellow, somebody's got to look at it. And then the ones that turn red, they get declination letters.
And you talk about
that's how the process is working.
That's automated for you. That's AI. It looks like, oh, my, Russell's calling in from Connecticut. So I think I threatened to harass somebody to get on the call. Hey, Russell, do you have a question? A question for us?
Yes, how are you doing, Debbie? Yeah, and thank you for all this. This is great, finding the inner workings of the whole thing. I was going to say I guess there's a lot of talk that there's a big chance of some type of softening, depending, again, Florida, and depending on which markets. I'm in Connecticut, so as far as short sales becoming more a thing.
So is that a thought? Go ahead, Julie.
The market is always cyclical. There are always defaults. It just depends on where they are. In the 80s, it was down in Texas and Oklahoma because of oil bust. Okay, then it was up around the rust bucket around the states up in the north. And so, you know, there's always hurricanes, tornadoes, blizzards, floods, all those things affect consumers. So there's always going to be delinquencies out there. Being able to take advantage of the market is a good thing for everybody involved. Okay, the mortgage servicers get fees for doing workout deals. The investors save money, the mortgage investors. The mortgage insurance companies pay out less in claims. The homeowners avoid the negative repercussion, and you get to take a property on and use it as a rental or flip it yourself and make some money on it. And then all of our property values stay higher because the properties aren't going to foreclosure. It's a win-win situation for everybody involved except my friends, the foreclosure attorneys. I'm very sorry.
Yeah, right. I was going to say,
Okay.
Well, I want to be able to position, because I'm looking to get back into it. So if there are any thoughts, because I know I was looking at it all years ago, and now I'm getting back in.
I think the time is ripe for that, Russell, and I hope you're able to join us on the 12th.
Is it going to be online too?
It absolutely is.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Great.
So and bring more questions when you come, and we hope to see you there. Thank you for giving us a call today.
You're welcome. Thanks so much.
And Tiffany.
Yes.
You and the caller make a great point in that this technology piece of it is only growing. Mm-hmm. So having the correct information input into the system at the very beginning is crucial.
And I think you're going to talk about that with us and when you tell us how to get this package together. And so my producer is telling me that we only have 2 minutes here. So I'm going to ask you, are there any parting words that you would like to leave us with before we embark on our close of day and then waiting and leading up to the 12th?
Well, I want to encourage all the listeners, those who have never tried a short sale, don't be afraid. Come. Learn how to pick good short sale deals, because you too can make some money off of these. And then the listeners out there who think they're pros in short sales, I want you to come, because I can even teach an old dog new tricks.
All right, then that means I should be there. So I look forward to our engagement. And hey, our time is up, everybody. Thank you very much for listening with Julie and I. Julie, thank you for being on with me this evening. You guys check us out on Thursday at CincinnatiRia.com and make sure you join us on the 12th. Thank you very much. Happy investing and good evening.